From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. We'll have some open lines for you later this hour. Next hour, a special night with Dr. Leonard Horowitz on saving your life. Is he the modern-day prophet, as some claim? Well, just moments ago, the House narrowly approved the Central American Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA. It's a personal triumph for President Bush, who campaigned aggressively for the accord he said would foster prosperity and democracy in the hemisphere. The 217-215 vote, that's how close it was, just after midnight, adds six Latin American countries to the growing lists of nations with free trade agreements with the United States. It was an uphill effort to win a majority, with Bush traveling to Capitol Hill earlier in the day to appeal to wavering Republicans to support a deal he said was critical to U.S. national security. A lot of people opposed to CAFTA, many Democrats. We'll have to find out exactly what happens once he signs this into law. The government is investigating now another possible new case of mad cow disease, but says there is no threat to the U.S. food supply. Testing indicated the presence of this disease in a cow that died on a farm of where they will not tell us. The animal was burned and buried. They simply say it's important to note that this animal poses no threat to our food supply because it did not enter the human food or animal feed chains. Well, according to the Agriculture Department, the department knows the location of the farm, but again, not disclosing it. Well, something's coming, they say. A big active sunspot group is lurking just behind the sun's eastern limb. How do we know this? Well, apparently it just keeps exploding and throwing clouds of hot, magnetized gas into space, and they're able to see this. Now, soon, perhaps, they say, within 48 hours, this hidden sunspot will reveal itself. The sun's 27-day rotation is slowly turning the sunspot toward Earth, and if the spot remains active, we can expect Earth-directed explosions as early as this weekend and continuing next week. We'll monitor this story for you as well. In an astonishing setback for the shuttle program, NASA has now grounded future flights because of the foam debris that led to the Columbia disaster still poses a risk to space missions. During Shuttle Discovery's liftoff, a chunk of foam blew off the external fuel tank just 2 minutes into the flight. NASA does not believe the debris hit the shuttle, but had it come off, they say, just a bit earlier, it may have caused the same damage that doomed Columbia 2.5 years ago. Our science advisor, Richard C. Hoagland, is with us now. Richard, this is just absolutely incredible. It is almost as if we're looking at a rerun of a bad movie.
Well, what's really weird is that Eileen Collins, who is the commander, in her wake-up call yesterday morning, which was really late last night, just before you came on the air, which I, of course, have been watching and monitoring, she had requested before launch that they play excerpts from the film, the Bill Murray film, Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the theme of Groundhog Day was that he and his romantic interest were caught in a time loop, and they kept living the same day over and over and over again. And I said in my blog this morning at enterprisemission.com that this is so eerie because we really have been caught in a NASA Groundhog Day time loop for the last 20 years. I remember being at the Cape 20 years ago in 81 when the first shuttle, Columbia, STS-1, was launched, and there were overwhelming concerns for the tiles. In fact, when John Young and I think it was Fred Hayes looked out the back windows at the Olmos pods, which are those bulging things on the side of the tail, they saw several of the tiles were missing. And, of course, we couldn't see, and they couldn't see what was underneath, you know, on the flat belly of the shuttle, which takes the brunt of the heating when you come back in the atmosphere. But I imagine there were fears, and it was discussed by some of the press at the time, that the whole damn bottom of the shuttle was brand-new burnished aluminum, that all the tiles had fallen off en route to orbit. God. So what did they do then? It turns out, we found out a few days after they came back safely, this is 20 years ago now, it turns out they turned some of the national assets, the spy satellites, onto the belly of Columbia and took photographs, very high resolution imagery, digitally downlinked it to the ground to NASA, and made basically sure that it was okay to come back in. What they did not do, according to the NASA reports for Columbia when she died, you know, 2.5 years ago. Now we fast forward the film to this morning, to these revelations that a chunk of foam came off the orbiter, the tank as the orbiter was going into orbit, and could, if it had hit the leading edge of that wing, resulted in exactly the same catastrophe for Discovery that happened to Columbia 2.5 years ago. What I'm really feeling, what I said in my blog, is that we're endlessly committed to this time loop until we develop a different mode of transportation to take human beings into space. And it's been 40 years almost since we went to the moon and Apollo, and we're still using rockets and propulsion technology, which is archaic, which requires tiles. We need something different.
It's almost as if the man upstairs, Richard, is telling all of us, folks, exactly that. It's time for change.
The one bright spot, and I talk about this in the captain's blog, is that Mike Griffin, on the morning of launch, cautioned the press, cautioned all those assembled in the auditorium at that press conference. He said, this is a miracle because this is still incredibly primitive technology. Now, there are lots of other options, George. We need to do a program on the options, the alternatives within current physics, not mainstream physics.
I think I may be doing that with you on August 7th.
Okay, that's Sunday, the day that they're coming back.
They're supposed
back,
to
right?
come back that day, exactly.
Okay, you and I need to talk about maybe a couple of other guests who have expertise.
Sure.
But we definitely need to be looking as a nation, as a society, if we want to be a leading space power, if we want to basically keep up with the Chinese and with the Russians and the Europeans, if we want to put men and women into orbit and go and explore the high frontier and put bases on the moon and go on to Mars, we cannot do it with this archaic technology that when someone sneezes, the country catches a cold.
I agree with that. Richard C. Hoagland, thanks again for the update. I keep asking you. It looks like we're all set now, but something else always happens, so we'll just be in touch.
There is one other potential problem.
What's that?
We have a chipped tile at the front of the shuttle on the underside at the base of the nose wheel landing gear door. There are three incredible...
That's what you mentioned yesterday, right?
Which I mentioned yesterday. Yeah. They are going to rendezvous with the space station in about 6 hours. As they approach, as Eileen Collins brings the shuttle in, she flips it upside down, and the two astronauts on board the space station with 400 and 800 millimeter lenses are going to be taking super high-res digital imagery and downlinking that to the ground, because it's possible. This is a far-out possibility, but I just had a call from an inside source a few minutes ago before I went on the air, and he said you need to raise this one possibility, which is not yet being discussed in public. Because of the uncertainty of that missing chip tile at the base of that gear door, if they have to hang out at the station while the ground does testing and satisfy themselves that there's no danger,
right,
they could wind up staying at the space station much longer than the plan 13 days. So stay tuned.
All right, Richard. EnterpriseMission.com. Thanks again. Appreciate you updating us.
Thanks,
on
George.
The Space Shuttle Discovery. And all this, of course, could this very well be what remote viewer Ed Dames has been talking about all along, the kill shot, where he talks about the major solar flares occurring, that the shuttle having to come down earlier. All this is very strange indeed. And again, I just mentioned the story about the possibility of huge solar flares next week as well. But Ed Dames talked about his kill shot and some catastrophes that could affect this planet. The man convicted of plotting to blow up the Los Angeles airport on the eve of the millennium has been sentenced now to 22 years in prison. Now, that might not seem long enough. I don't think it is, but Ahmad Rassam's sentence reflected apparently his cooperation in telling international investigators about the workings of terror camps in Afghanistan. Unfortunately, the 38-year-old decided to shut his mouth up a little bit, and he stopped talking to investigators in early 2003. In London, police arrested a man they believe planted a bomb on a London train last week. But they've warned now three other suspects are still at large, and they could attack again. It's the first time police arrested a suspected bomber since four suicide bombers killed 52 people in London on July 7th, and four more devices failed to explode properly 2 weeks later. In Wichita, Kansas, a judge has waived the usual 60-day waiting period and granted an immediate divorce to the wife of the BTK killer, Dennis Rader, agreeing that her mental health was in danger. Dennis Rader did not contest the filing or appear for the hearing. He signed over the couple's property and all his retirement benefits to Paula Rader, who had been married to him for 34 years and never even knew. In a courtroom confession last month, Rader said that sexual fantasies had driven him to kill 10 people in the Wichita area between 1974 and 1991. As the BTK killer, bind, torture, kill, he taunted media and police and communications that eventually led to his arrest. His sentencing is set for August 17th. About 300 people, most of them Boy Scouts, sickened by the heat Wednesday while waiting for President Bush to arrive at a memorial service for four Scout leaders who were killed while pitching a tent beneath a power line for this jamboree. The president did not show up. He's going to come by tomorrow. Severe storms kept him out of the area, but these Scouts were all sick, 300 of them, because of the high temperatures. Over the last several weeks, there have been a series of earthquakes near Mount St. Helens, 3+. What does that all mean? In a moment, expert Dr. Robert R.B. Tremblay comes in. He's an expert on volcanoes, and we'll find out what's cooking on Mount St. Helens. Dr. Robert R.B. Tremblay is the founder and principal research volcanologist at SWVRC and is a registered volcanologist with the International Association of Volcanology and Chemistry of the Earth's Interior. He is an award-winning scientist. He's traveled all over the world working on volcanoes and is the principal designer of the highly successful software program called Eruption Pro 10.5, which provides long-range forecasts of volcanic eruptions all over the world. We're going to talk with him for a bit about some activity near Mount St. Helens and some other things happening on this planet. Hello, Doctor. Welcome back.
Thank you, George. How are you?
My pleasure. I'm fine. You had taught me that if we saw a series of 3+ near Mount St. Helens, something could be going on. And I've noticed that since July 15th, there have been 6 of them, 3.1 or better. So what does that mean?
The short answer is it doesn't really mean too much at all. those are kind of expected type earthquakes around Mount St. Helens. Basically the activity around Mount St. Helens has been fairly status quo for the last 2-3 months. We have the CVO, the Cascade Volcano Observatory, which actually works at the volcano proper, has reported that the growth of the new lava dome inside the crater continues, and it is accompanied by low rates of seismicity, low emission rates of steam and volcanic gases, and minor production of ash. So these earthquakes that we are experiencing are really nothing unusual and are somewhat typical during eruption processes.
Okay, but you did say if you had a series of threes, something could be going on.
Yes, and particularly if we have what we call swarming, which is a whole bunch of activity in a relatively short period of time. But these 3.1 quakes and stuff over a couple of weeks is really not dangerous or significant of too much at all.
We had a 5.6 earthquake in the western portion of Montana.
Yes.
Well, you know, we're getting close to the Yellowstone National Caldera there.
Yeah, I already had an email on that the other day.
So what does that mean?
It doesn't mean anything. That's that particular Montana quake was, we're notified, by the way, here at the Research Center on any quake in the world that's 5 or better in magnitude.
Okay.
And remind me in a minute, and I'll talk to you about the Indonesian quake, because I got a lot of good stuff on that.
Okay. Yeah, I will do that. Okay, so as far as that Montana quake,
that
nothing to worry about?
That was on a normal fault.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with the Yellowstone caldera.
Seismologist in the Midwest is talking about the New Madrid Fault really rumbling pretty soon. What's going on there?
Well, same thing. It's kind of normal, and it's relatively overdue along the New Madrid Fault. But that is a normal standard earthquake zone, if you will, very much like the San Andreas Fault is in California, except the New Madrid is more or less in the middle of the United States.
And more people. I think when they had the big one in the 1800s, they only had 400 people there in New Madrid. They all died, by the way.
There was even one even bigger than that. I think before it was even populated, it was near what's now called Joplin, Missouri.
Yes. Well, so we might be overdue in that region.
Could be, yes.
What are the potential problem spots on the planet?
Well, actually, believe it or not, Indonesia at the moment.
Still, okay. What's going on?
Well, interesting thing has happened. First of all, just to kind of set the stage, as most of people know, there was a tremendous earthquake in the Indonesian area, 155 miles off the coast of Sumatra. It was caught on December the 26th of 2004. It's killed over 310,000 people so far. Devastated homes, lands affected 12 countries, and so on and so forth.
Cracked part of the planet, as a matter of fact.
That's exactly right. In fact, I got the data on that, too, if you want that. It's it actually made the Earth spin faster by 2.676 millionths of a second.
Did it shift the magnetic pole for a bit?
It changed the axis of the tilt of the thing by 1 inch.
That's pretty significant for an Earth event.
Yes, it is, but it doesn't affect anything.
No.
In fact, I tell my students I can't use that anymore as a ploy to sleep in for my class.
Yeah, but this Indonesia quake that caused this incredible tsunami, it seems to continue to have some rumblings thereafter.
Yes.
Can another big one occur?
Oh, yes. Very definitely so. In fact, the United Nations has now directed, and it is now in place, not 100% just yet, but a good portion of it is now a tsunami warning system in the Indian Ocean, very much like we have in the Pacific, as a result of the Good Friday quake back in the, I forget what year it was a Good Friday quake, 1930 or 40, mm-hmm. something like that. But they have a very similar one now in the Indian Ocean. But here's what's interesting relative to volcanoes. In the year 2004, we had a total, just considering the Indonesian volcanoes. Now, when I say Indonesian area, I'm talking about Indonesia proper, Malaysia, Sumatra, Java, Papua New Guinea, Sulawesi, you know, all of those islands and so forth in there, that whole general area there. In just in that area alone, in 2004, we had 15 volcanic eruptions for the whole year in just that area. In the first 6 months of 2004, we had seven eruptions in the Indonesian area. Now, in 2005, since the December 26th earthquake, of 2004,
right.
We've already had 11 eruptions in the Indonesian area, and we've only, and that was as of the 1st of July. So basically...
So we could go to 22 or so, well over what they had last year.
Well,
bottom line, RB, what does that mean?
Well, funny you should ask. There's, in our business, there's kind of two camps, if you will, of thought, and the camp it meaning that there's one group of scientists who are absolutely convinced that there's a definite correlation and relationship between earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. The other camp, which I happen to basically subscribe to, says, yes, there is some correlation, but not enough correlation to say if you have such and such a magnitude quake at such and such a depth, at such and such a distance from a volcano, you're going to have an eruption. We're not quite ready to say that yet or go that far. However, you know, with this Indonesian incident, I'm sure that those persons who are subscribing to the first camp, the ones that...
Hold on, RB. I want to get your final comments when we come right back. Let's wrap up with volcano expert Dr. Tremblay before we go to open lines for the rest of this hour. Okay, RB, so we're pacing way ahead in terms of volcanic activity in the Indonesia area. What does that mean?
Well, it's just, you know, as I was saying, you know, the camp of scientists that are that have a definite correlation between earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, it's really adding a lot of evidence to their cause, and we'll just have to keep an eye on it.
The program, Eruption Pro 10.5, is it noticing anything unusual right now?
No, it's keeping up. In fact, we're at 94% right now, and 10.6 is going to be released on the 15th of August. And I was noticing just prior to your show during the news, you were talking about the sunspots and so forth.
Yes.
I was originally trained as an astronomer, astrophysicist, and there's been a lot of work done by Tom Yeager, who's deceased now, but he's the one who started Hawaii Volcano Observatory, and Dr. Steve O'Mara, who's currently a volcanologist slash astronomer. I've worked out all the mathematics, and a new eruption probe will take into account sunspots, solar activity, and lunar influence.
Excellent.
So it's going to add that, and that'll be released on August the 15th, that new software.
You know, somehow, I don't know if you can include this, but we talked to a geologist by the name of Jim Berkland, and he also includes animal disappearances.
Oh.
Apparently, they pick up way before human beings that something's going on, and he looks in the paper, and he sees all these missing animal reports, and he adds that with everything else that he does, and he's pretty successful.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, RB.
Okay.
Appreciate you being on the program. His website, by the way, is swvrc.org, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to have open lines for you now this hour. Let me tell you a few other stories. A German man's severed finger traveled 60 kilometers by rail after its owner trapped his hand in the door trying to board a train at the last minute. He didn't get on. The finger did. Passengers traveling noticed the finger lying on the floor. They alerted police. They collected it at the next station, found him. They were able to reattach the finger to the 34-year-old person. My gosh. A statue of the Virgin Mary has reportedly become flesh and starts to dance. More than 40,000 Catholics on their way to St. Peter's Church near Naples are trying to have a closer look. Witnesses say that the 5-foot white marble statue stretched out her arms, moved her legs. A local priest said the church is closing so that tests could be carried out on the statue. One witness says, "I saw the statue move without any doubt. The legs and arms were clearly moving, and my wife saw it as well." Some people who had phones photographed it. Japanese scientists have unveiled the most human-looking robot yet devised, a female android. Get up to the coasttocoastam.com website under Hot Stories. Take a look at this. She has flexible skin rather than hard plastic, a number of sensors and motors to allow her to turn and react in a human-like manner. She can flutter her eyelids and move her hands like a human, and she even appears to breathe. The professor who helped develop this android says one day robots could fool us into believing that they are human. This robot, they say, is unlike any robot that you've seen before, at least outside of science fiction movies. She has 31 actuators in her upper body, powered by a nearby air compressor, programmed to allow her to move like a human. It's up on the coasttocoastam.com website. And a Kenyan man says he has offered Bill Clinton 40 goats and 20 cows to marry Chelsea. He did this 5 years ago. He's still waiting for an answer. 40 goats and 20 cows. He is a 36-year-old man, and he simply is waiting for the former president to answer him so they can complete the deal. Here are the phone numbers for open lines. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is open for you at 818-501-4721. And the wildcard line, ready to roll, 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and Coast to Coast AM continues. Okay, here we go with open lines, but right around the corner at the top of the hour, we'll bring in Dr. Len Horowitz to chat with you about some incredible medical breakthroughs. He's also going to name some of his top medical products for the year 2006. It should be a great program. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Where are you?
I'm in Madisonville, Tennessee.
Well, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
I had something that I really wanted everybody to know.
What's that?
Well, I'm a member of Ed James's online thing because I ordered his remote viewing.
Okay, and sure.
He has a group there, and you can post messages on his board. Well, this afternoon, after sitting and reading up on stuff about the shuttle and everything, it concerned me really bad. And so I posted a message on the board, and I kept checking back to see if anybody had, give a response. And I checked back, and lo and behold, I had one response. And I thought, okay, well, let's check it out. And it was from Ed James himself.
Oh, what did he say?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what it said. It said four words, and so it begins.
Uh-oh.
And underneath that, he put a link to www.spaceweather.com.
Mm-hmm.
And
talks about the flares that could hit us next week.
Yeah, and, for him to say, and so it begins, that's pretty much. It's scary to me. I don't know about anybody else, but I really wanted everybody to know that he thinks it's happening.
Well, it is unusual that the space shuttle would be up there. He talked about that being forced to come down because of, I think, a meteor shower and also flares. And of course, the flares are going to heat up. There's no doubt about that.
I thought it was kind of strange that they even would let it go up, knowing that, we have all these meteor showers that's coming up in the next few days, week. Anyway, tonight and tomorrow night, there's supposed to be some. And
I guess there's some urgency to do what they did, and we'll just have to sit back and see what happens.
Okay, I appreciate it. Just wanted, people to know that at least he believes that it's happening.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. It is strange indeed. First-time caller line, welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hey, it's Danny from Wilmington, Delaware.
Hi, Danny.
How you doing?
Good.
I just found you a couple weeks ago. Very into your show.
Well, I'm glad you did. Well, and what makes you call us tonight?
I was just thinking with the space program, with the shuttle, and I was thinking I wish that we put a little bit more funding and time and effort into sea exploration. Remember in the 50s, there was talk about living underwater, ocean, under the oceans and farming in the oceans. And then it seems almost as if the space program really snuffed out all of that vigor. And I never hear much about it. And what do you think?
Well, there's two camps about living underground. First of all, in the water, in the ocean.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would go to an underwater hotel. I don't know if I would. Would you?
Man, it's weird. I have a strange longing. One of my favorite places is standing on the shore. I have a weird thing about the
standing
sea.
On the shore is one thing. Living under the ocean is another.
I know. Sometimes I think there's things down there that we don't know and we haven't seen. And
I'm a Navy guy, and I didn't have to go in a submarine. Thank God.
Yeah. Well. I don't know how good the view is.
But
what?
The future may mean doing more things like that. I mean, who knows what's going to happen to the atmosphere? Who knows, you know, what our ability will be to be able to live on the surface? We may have to live in the ocean.
Polluting the waters.
Absolutely.
Pretty good, too.
So we'll see what happens, but it does make you think. Thanks, Danny.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being on the program. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Sarah. I'm from Spokane.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I really just wanted to call and share something that I'm experiencing.
What's going on with you? What?
Well, it's recent, within a couple years, since I've experienced this haunted house that my family used to live in.
Okay.
Not with me personally there, but my brothers and my mom experienced some paranormal activity, seeing good and evil. And it really became strong when I saw three stars over my mother's, over her head. And it was very intense. But since then, I've been seeing, I work with a lot of clients every day. I'm touching people all the time. And so I'm always open to something else. but I just see stars all the time. Sometimes they're purple, sometimes they're indigo, sometimes they're crystal blue, sometimes they're white.
And you just see them around people?
Just like when I'm in my facial room doing the skincare.
Oh, you're an esthetician.
Yes.
I know these things. Okay, so you do what you do.
And I see these little stars from the corner of my eye in my room when I'm working with my people.
Now, I will always say this, because this is the most important advice I can give you, first and foremost. Have you been to an ophthalmologist who's checked you out?
No.
Because you have to rule out first, as much as I love the paranormal and the unusual, you also have to rule out any medical condition.
See, my boyfriend says if they start getting worse,
well,
let him know, but they come.
You're seeing them when? How often?
Just sometimes, even when I'm lying in bed meditating, I'll see them.
You see them up on the ceiling, stuff like that?
Yeah, on the wall.
Well, why don't you
sometimes
do that?
Sometimes I see them in a circle.
It's not going to hurt you to call up not an optometrist now, but an ophthalmologist. He's a medical doctor who deals with the eyes. And just tell him, look, I've got some of these strange symptoms. I don't know what they are. And go on in and see them.
Sounds good.
All right. Your boyfriend's right. And you know, if they rule everything out, well, then call me back. Then we're dealing with something else.
All right.
Okay. Appreciate it. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hey, George. This is Josh in Wausau again.
Hey, Josh. What's up?
Well, I have to tell you that earlier tonight, I was discussing with my friend Robin a sequence of threes I've been seeing, three threes in a row, and I just had to call in and let you know about that. I was taught not to ignore omens and portents like that. Anytime there's a series of numbers, I always have to investigate. Tonight, I was talking to Robin about these three threes that I keep seeing, and then all of a sudden, you bring up the three threes.
Let me tell you, too, I've got a meeting next week with some people, and the room number is 111. So I emailed some people back and said, this is a good place to have a meeting.
You know who would be a good person to talk to about that?
Glynis McCants. Just go to this website, numberslady.com.
Numberslady.com.
Yep, you can email her. She'll get back to you.
All right, that sounds great.
Okay, appreciate it. I mean, there is something in numbers. There's no doubt about that. Our next wild card line, your turn. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. My name's Bethany. I'm calling from San Pedro.
Hi.
I actually have some information for you about last night's caller that was talking about ice.
And I've since done a little research about that. It's an emergency system, right?
Yeah, what it is if you type in the word ice in your cell phone and you put whoever you want to contact in case you're hurt or something happens to you.
Okay, and you're breaking up, too, so you need a new cell phone.
I do need a new cell phone.
See, I knew it. All right, thanks. Yeah, I guess there is this new emergency system for your cell phones, which I've not used. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Could we replace the fuel tanks on a shuttle with newer flasks rather than the external insulation? They wouldn't have to be as perfect as what you put your hot or cold beverages in. And even the short comings from imperfection, we could put glycol on the outside of the tanks like we do on airplane wings, just shut it off sufficiently before the launch that there wouldn't be large puddles.
Well, too late now. I think we're stuck. We're gonna have to regroup this entire system, I think.
Oh, I agree with you ultimately, but there's another thing in it where you're trying to deploy those sails. The sails could actually be the equivalent, say, of Mylar with a reflective surface, if money not nothing at all, a gold reflective surface. And when you got in outer space, you could just pull the outer shell off and unwrap that huge foil.
You either sound like an engineer or an inventor.
I've just spent my lifetime as a, you know, what they call a professional student, somebody that doesn't make any money out of it.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. I know they're thinking of things to do, and it's just unfortunate with what's happening to the space program right now. It is really bizarre. As you well know, and I'll say it for the 50th time this week, I don't believe in coincidences. Somebody's telling us something that it's time to get this space program fixed and changed, and we need to move in a different direction. First-time caller line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello?
Hello?
It's your turn.
Yes, we're in Oregon earlier in the summer, and all of a sudden, it's almost like this, it looked like a bear, but it wasn't a bear. It looked like a man. It came running up, and my dad hit it with his truck. He had an F-150. It wasn't a little truck. And we didn't think nothing about it. It was like, oh, bear. Got home. There was like a finger stuck in the grill.
You've got a finger of some kind of creature in your grill?
Yeah, it was an actual finger.
Where is the finger now?
We just threw it off. He said that's...
Oh, no! He got rid of it. What did it look like?
It just looked like a regular human finger, but it had hair all over it.
I wish you could have kept that thing. We could have had a DNA test on that. You might have. How big did this creature look? Did you get a look?
It was huge. It was like its head was up to the top of the windshield on the F-150.
And obviously then it was not a bear, or it would have left something else other than a finger.
Yeah, and it got up and went away. That's what we were like, wow.
And what kind of damage was there to the truck, if any?
It smashed the whole front of the truck up, and we just kind of went over it. And then,
oh, my God, and you threw away the finger of what could be a Bigfoot.
I know.
Gone forever. No way to salvage it. Gone.
No way.
Oh, all right. That's the first time I've ever heard one like that, and it's gone. That we could have had a DNA test. As a matter of fact, we may have some DNA samples in tomorrow from the University of Alberta in Canada, where they are looking at some hair found from a creature up there in the Yukon. A couple people spotted a 9-foot creature, they say, and they got some hair samples. They're testing them. Hopefully by tomorrow we might have the results. They think by Thursday, so we'll let you know all about that. But this one's unfortunate. They could have had an actual finger of a Bigfoot. Wild card line. I've got about a minute for you. You're on the air. Hi there.
Oh, hey, George. How are you?
Good.
This is Mike.
Hi, Michael.
From Houston, Texas.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know the numbers lady is correct once again. The number 8 worked nicely.
With no ramifications, I hope?
No, sir.
That's
no,
good.
Sir. No ramifications.
How much did we win on this one or get?
Well, about $900 that was found. And here's a little cool thing about that. My dad passed away about 8 years ago.
Uh-huh.
About 20 years ago, he bought a revolver, just something that he had around the house. Well, I still had the box for it, and it was in my closet. I was inches from throwing it in the garbage can before I just decided to lift up the bottom cardboard just to look underneath.
Oh.
And there was $900 right there.
There it was. In cash?
In cash, yeah, there was $900 bills. He got sick. He must have forgotten about it. Slipped his mind, yeah.
What a neat feeling, too.
Really cool.
Yeah,
really cool. And I hit a $3,600 jackpot on a slot machine 2 weeks ago.
All right, now, don't go too much with his 8 now.
I'm not.
You got to slow back.
Not.
I know a guy who did exactly what you did, and then he gave it all back.
I understand the odds. It was crazy.
Got to be careful. Okay, thanks. Appreciate that. I get excited when I find $5 in my pants that I may have left from a week before. Who knows? Or maybe the cleaner put them in there for me as a present. We'll be back in a moment with our guest, Dr. Leonard Horowitz. Get ready for this one. Dr. Len does not hold back. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.